Today is March 21st, 2018, and this is episode number 454 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and sometimes in the middle of the night, I get drunk texts to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And in a little bit of foreshadowing for this particular episode, you could head over to facebook.com/group/context machine and join in the conversation there.
Brian, just in my defense, I don't drunk text that often.
That's true. You don't. I did this, an actual drunk text that I got last night.
And it wasn't me.
It wasn't you. Quote, "Does only biological intelligence deserve rights?" Boom. See? Drunk.
And
that,
you know,
all of that, unquote. That was all the drunk text.
And I have to say, that now ranks as one of my top favorite drunk texts ever.
Absolutely. That's why, yeah. I love her.
And yeah, I get that. And and I have to say, I'm not prone to jealousy, but boy, I wish I could have come up with drunk texts that good.
Fair enough. All right. Well, we do have some topics this week, unlike most weeks.
Yeah, but I'm going to stall you for a second and let everyone know, yeah, we also have a sponsor. And our sponsor is Jamf.
That is good news, and it's also good that you probably forestalled me lest we skip over it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's I really like Jamf a lot, so I couldn't help myself. All right, I'm done stalling you. Go say whatever the crap you were going to say.
What?
I don't know. I was just mixing it up a little bit.
Right. So we're going to talk about Facebook Cambridge Analytica.
Mm-hmm.
And the current Facebook blowback. The Facebook blowback.
Man, and if you drank, your drunk texts would be awesome.
Dude, that's just a scary thought. Let's just not even head down that path. We're also going to talk about Uber. And we got a listener comment. Actually, I guess that listener comment actually came in too. Daily observations.
Right, but I'm going to call it a crossover comment.
It's a crossover comment.
How's that?
Yes, I like that. And we do that sometimes.
Sure.
Because it turns out we know the guys who do the daily observations.
We met them once,
yeah.
They were okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Not nice guys. And then we also have speaking of Facebook, we had a comment from long-term listener. Actually, he used to write for us, Eelike, had some comments about the AI. So we're going to talk a little bit about artificial intelligence.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Indeed. You know what I'm going to do? As a matter of fact, I'm going to find a certain quote from a certain book that I think is relevant. So we'll save that, though. We'll save that for the thing. So let's start off with the Cambridge Analytica Facebook kerfuffle. The delete Facebook, the hashtag delete Facebook.
Yeah, just so you know, if you're really, really hot under the collar and have decided you want to delete your Facebook account, I did a how-to today on how to do that. And what I did with it, because I totally get that in the heat of the moment, when that passion is just boiling through your veins, that you may be ready to delete your Facebook account, but by the time you sit down to do it, you may think that might be a little drastic. So I also included instructions on how to deactivate your account so you can get it back if you want. And for those of you that decide, I really need the account, you know, maybe it's the only way you have to really talk with friends that aren't around here or around you. I don't know. They might be around me. Anyhow, the real point is, I also included some links to other articles we've written on locking down your privacy.
Yeah, and I've been in a couple of Facebook chats, Twitter chats, Twitter threads, with people who have been deleting all app access to their Facebook accounts.
Yeah, and
as a matter of fact, you know what? Let's do a separate piece on that.
I already did.
On just deleting app access?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Sweet. I'm so glad that we already did that and that I clearly read it.
And that you were so on top of that.
So on top of that.
Yeah. That may have been on Monday, which would explain why you wouldn't remember, because yeah,
that's like 2 days ago, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy talk. That's all right, crazy
pop
talk.
Quiz. What'd you have for lunch yesterday?
It involved food.
All right. See, this totally validates why you don't remember the article.
There you go. So now, as always, when we talk about Facebook, especially when we bag on Facebook, I am very much aware of the fact that we use Facebook professionally here. Like, I mean, I you know, Jeff, I'm on Facebook. I've got, I don't know, a couple hundred friends. I'm pretty careful about. I only add people that I know. By the way, mm-hmm. People who are at know of me through my work. Yeah, people that know of me through my work, I direct them to Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Twitter's public and Facebook is for friends. But, you know, I'm personally not on Facebook. I only go to Facebook for when someone directs me to something, and that's usually because they posted it. Hey, did you see my Facebook post? which certainly happens, you know, probably once a week or something. And then of course for TMO, we post articles to TMO and people comment on those articles there. And of course our Facebook group for the Context Machine, which happens to honestly be my very favorite Facebooky thing. Is groups or any kind of like any kind of private group where people can meet together. I've used Facebook in that way for games. I enjoy that sort of thing infinitely more than I enjoy infinitely scrolling through news feeds.
Mm-hmm.
Personally.
Yeah, no, I totally get it.
Of course, Facebook's own research shows you that infinitely scrolling through news feeds often leads people feeling less good than they did before they started.
This is probably one of the reasons why I declare Twitter bankruptcy multiple times a day.
Yeah. I can't keep up with everything in Twitter. And I'm also very careful about who I follow on Twitter. I don't randomly follow everybody on Twitter. I'm super careful about it. And I still can't keep up with it.
Yeah.
The one social media platform that I consume 99, if not 100% of every post is Instagram.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really enjoy going through my Instagram feed.
Yeah, I really enjoy that too. And again, I'm very careful about who I follow. Which, you know, definitely makes that more manageable. I don't know. But the point here is that Cambridge Analytica, that was the point.
Oh, right. Cambridge
Analytica. And this growing delete Facebook hashtag movement. First of all, I'm going to be honest. I don't think anything is going to come of it. I don't think Facebook is going to have any lasting harm here. And if we're lucky, Facebook will make some lasting changes to the way it does things. And I don't think that's going to happen either. I think this will blow over like every other, you know, every other tempest in a teapot protest when it comes to Facebook or Twitter or anything else.
I think for the most part, you're right. I think that we will see some changes on Facebook's part, even if they're only superficial. And, you know, like Mark Zuckerberg today, he wrote a big Facebook post where he said, here are some things that we're doing now to address these issues. You know, like they're going to add a tool to the little blue menu bar at the top of your Facebook page where you get to see all the apps that you've installed or that the Facebook apps you have installed. And
the Facebook apps you've installed or the apps you've given access to Facebook?
I believe it's the apps you've given access to Facebook as well as the Facebook platform apps.
Okay.
So not like separate Facebook client apps specifically.
Right.
So, but one of the things we're going to do with that, I mean, first you're going to be able to see all these apps you have installed. And based on what I'm seeing people post on Twitter, they're finding out that in some cases they have 300 or 500 apps that have had access to their data.
Yeah, because people use Facebook to log into stuff. Do you do that, by the way?
No.
Do you log into things? Yeah, I don't.
Absolutely not.
I don't either, because I know that Facebook is wanting to use that to further edge their profile on me. And I resent that.
And I understand the technology and that it should be very secure, but I just really have a hard time giving Facebook that much control over my logins. So I'm a hardcore one password user. I'll generate all these random passwords all day long and call it good. But one of the things that the new tool is going to do, in addition to show you all these apps that have access to your account, if anything in that list hasn't accessed your or hasn't been used in 3 months or more, it gets shut down as far as data access. And
yeah, that's a step in.
That's a step in the right direction. And when you grant apps access to your Facebook data, the default now is very restrictive. So it's like your name and email address. And any additional information, the app has to explicitly ask permission, so it becomes opt-in. And the company, the developer, whoever, has to have a contract with Facebook. So they have to get approval from Facebook before they'll even be able to do this.
Well, that's all fine and dandy. I don't know how that stops this particular situation, because
it doesn't.
Cambridge Analytica got – so Cambridge Analytica is a political data mining company started by Steve Bannon for the Donald Trump campaign. But it does more than just the Donald Trump campaign. This is part of Steve Bannon's little political pseudo empire. Mm-hmm. And they got the data that they used from some chucklehead with a so-called psychology quiz.
Right. Yeah. So this guy, and I just forgot his name again. What is my deal with that guy's name? Anyhow, he wrote an app that ties into Facebook. So it would run as an app inside the Facebook platform. And it was a survey, and people would take the survey, and the process of using accessing the survey let this guy siphon through your personal data, get your profile, and siphon off the profiles of all of your friends. And so they were able to get a crazy amount of information. Now,
especially from people who didn't have anything locked down, who friends of friends, and the public could access your crap. Because only 270,000 people is what I read. Only 270,000 people actually downloaded this guy's app, but he ended up getting data from some 50 million people as a consequence.
Right.
And then he gave the data to Ambridge, or you sold or gave. I don't know which. Do you know? Do you?
I'm assuming sold, but
you would think sold. Otherwise, he's
an idiot.
Like if he's going to do something this scummy, he should at least get some money for it. Right.
Right. Yeah. So my Jedi instincts tell me he was working in conjunction with Cambridge Analytica.
But we don't know that.
No, we don't know that. Hence Jedi instincts. So, yeah. So the year after he started doing this, Facebook implemented changes so that what he did, other apps shouldn't be able to do.
But
he'd already done it. And you have this whole thing. Okay, so I'm going to cut to the chase on how I feel about Zuckerberg's statement.
Yeah.
Which is that it's really nice, But why weren't these things policies for Facebook from the beginning?
Well, this comes down to this thing I've been on about now for quite a while. And that's that he doesn't understand the difference between what he can do and what he should do. He doesn't have, the difference between Mark Zuckerberg, who was a guy in the right place at the right time to kind of stumble into the right thing and have it take off. Mark Zuckerberg has done a lot more with his life than I have mine. Absolutely and positively, for sure. But I'm not going to put him in the camp of, you know, Larry Page and Steve Jobs,
I don't think he'll ever be in that camp, no matter how hard he tries.
Even if he eventually is worth more money, I don't think he belongs in that camp personally. And like I said, the man has done a lot more with his life than me. Right. This is objective commentary on my part and not some sort I hate people who like all they want to do is like tear down people. And that's not my thing here. I'm not wanting to tear down Mark Zuckerberg. But here is a difference between, you know, a Steve Jobs or a Larry Page or anyone of that caliber. And that's still not a good analogy. The thing is this: when young tech people have grown these companies and they've been these young tech people and they've, you know, ended up becoming fabulously wealthy, until the advent of Google or Facebook or maybe Twitter and Uber with Travis Kavanaugh, what is propelling these people to fabulous wealth and success now is information about us.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs might have made the wrong choices if what made Apple Apple in the 1970s was knowing everything about all of us. Steve Jobs might have made some mistakes too. I don't know, when he was young, when he was in his early 20s. Yes. Right? Because by the time he came back to Apple, and under his leadership, Apple, with him and Tim Cook, took on the tack that we should be protecting people's privacy. These guys had wisdom and experience behind them. And they had kids. They had kids that they were concerned about. But Tim Cook doesn't have a kid. He's got a nephew that he apparently thinks of as a kid. Right? Because remember, he said that there's he's got a nephew that he doesn't allow social media access.
Yeah. Yeah. So that tells me that he has more than just a passing interest in his nephew's life.
Right. And
good for him.
But these young tech magnates now, especially in the social media space, don't have that wisdom and experience. And Mark Zuckerberg had not learned that difference between what he can do and what he should do. And, you know, Facebook, my biggest example of that, of course, would be psychologically experimenting with us.
Oh, that was horrible.
I am still just outraged about this, that the Facebook thought that this was okay, where they would deliberately feed bad news to some people and good news to other people just to see how it affected their Facebook browsing experience and time. I mean, that is like they deliberately made they without their consent or knowledge or willing participation, they deliberately made some people feel bad. They made them feel bad just to see what they would do.
Yeah. And, you know, and a big thing in all of that for me was no consent.
No consent. Not even would you be, you know, willing to participate in an experiment we're doing.
Yeah, that would still Nothing. At least be some level of consent.
Right. Right. Yeah. If you're going to agree to something like that without knowing what it is, that's kind of on you. But they didn't even do that. And my problem here is that these punks thought that that was okay. They thought that was okay. They thought it was okay to make people feel bad, artificially make people feel bad just to see what they would do. So I don't like that.
I'm going to, just for a moment, play the horrible, horrible devil's advocate to that whole scenario.
Okay, just remember, your immortal soul may be at stake, but go ahead,
please. I'm a redhead. I have no soul.
Oh, right.
It's already been established through history.
Yes, this is a fair point.
So I'm totally off the hook here. Okay. If Facebook wanted to have truly, genuinely useful data that they knew hadn't been skewed by bias in any way, they couldn't tell people they were doing this experiment.
It's okay. You can still ask people to, I don't care. I don't give a crap. And I know that you don't actually think that makes it okay.
Oh no, it's not okay on any level. There is literally no excuse for what they did.
So here's the way to actually do this. You give everybody a random sample. And then you examine the random sample of newsfeed to see which skewed positively and which skewed negatively, and see how that affected their and then compare that to results of you know what people did.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to get the exact same data without deliberately making people feel bad.
Yeah, I am so with you on they need to learn the difference between what they can do and what they should do.
Yeah, and lots of people need to learn that difference, especially in this age of us being the product, and especially in this age of these, you know, it's never been easier to collect information about people. And don't get me wrong either, these young tech magnates are not the first people to not understand that. It's just now the stakes have become so big that it can affect lots of things, to wit, elections, society, culture, the silification thing that we're seeing now, we're in the especially here in the States, but probably all over the world, where liberals are hanging out with liberals because they can, and conservatives are hanging out with conservatives because they can, and everybody's in this big giant echo chamber of, you know, feeding back on feeding back their own confirmation biases instead of listening to other people and listening to a cross section of things that so they can have an informed opinion. I mean, this sort of thing is affecting culture. It's affecting the stability of our culture and society. This is super important stuff. And I don't think, getting back to the original thing, I don't think until Mr. Zuckerberg learns that difference between what he can do and what he should do, and learns to stop thinking about us as disposable commodities that he can do with as we want, as long as he can make money from us, there's going to be no real lasting change at Facebook, not coming from this, at least not at this stage of the game.
All right. There's an argument that I've heard come up time and again when social networks are exposed for giving up our personal information. And it's that it's all in the public. You put it in the public. What did you expect?
Well, that is true to a certain extent. I don't think it applies in this particular case because this chucklehead that gave the information or sold the information or worked with Cambridge Analytics to get them the information, he was violating Facebook's own terms of service, and Facebook knew that and didn't do anything about it after the fact. And they didn't block Cambridge Analytica from having access to the platform. They didn't block this chucklehead from having access to the platform. And most importantly, they didn't tell anybody about this. They didn't openly acknowledge it until mainstream news reports broke the news.
Right. And then at that point, they suspended the accounts. Now, in that interim, when they weren't talking about all of this, Facebook says that they got certifications from Cambridge Analytics that all the data had been destroyed, and from
I don't believe that. Okay, that may be true, and I don't have any proof one way or the other, but I don't believe that for even a freaking heartbeat.
And neither do I. And so
Steve Bannon has no morals or, you know, compunction about doing anything whatsoever. So I do not believe that, but go ahead, please.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. And the guy that originally siphoned the data, supposedly certification from him, he deleted the data. I'm not believing any of this until it's been proven forensically. And
you so still can't prove it.
Well, Facebook is bringing in their own independent team to forensically analyze the Cambridge Analytica servers to see if the data that Cambridge Analytica says was deleted really was. And so right now, Cambridge Analytica is saying, no, when we said we deleted that data years ago, we deleted it. It was gone.
Yeah, they're not going to let anybody. And none of that even matters. That cat is out of the bag. That right. Data is out there. And if there's one real lesson that comes out of all this, it really should be that people need to understand that if they're putting it out there, it's going to be used against them or you know, it's going to be used for profit. It's going to be used in some way. Right. But that's different from absolving Facebook of all responsibility.
I agree. And I am not absolving Facebook of responsibility in any way, just to be
clear. Right. Right. But I mean, at the same time, let's name names, John Keat.
Hey, John.
He's not here to defend himself.
Hope you liked the video I sent you earlier.
But he's been going on all day today about the sanctimonious aspect of anyone who's complaining about this. He's wrong, but that's okay. He does have a point to a certain extent. We are the product. We've known that we are the product. Anyone who doesn't know that they're the product at this point, that's on them. Mm-hmm. That's on them because this information is out there. And, we do need to take responsibility for the fact that information that we have willingly put out there is being used. And we need to own the fact that comes down on that's back on us. But again, that doesn't also absolve Facebook's responsibility for how they handled this, how they allowed it to happen in the first place, the lack of disclosure to its users, and the lack of any kind of punitive actions against the players involved in this. And that has nothing to do with the politics of Cambridge Analytica or Steve Bannon. A liberal group could have done the same thing. Of course, I would like to point out the liberal group did not, at least not that we know of. But the politics of this are not the issue, right? And what Cambridge Analytica did is scummy, and what the guy with the psychology quiz did is scummy, and how Facebook handled it proves that they're a terrible trustee of we the product.
You know, part of the big problem for me with this whole Cambridge Analytica thing was that when Facebook set up their system so that other companies could access data, they set it up in a way so that they could access everything. And now they're saying, oh, we're going to, you know, or we started locking this down in 2014 or 15, whenever they started that, and we're doing more now. Why didn't they just do that in the beginning? Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Why weren't they doing that in the beginning? Right. And it's because of the thing. It's because they didn't. Mark Zuckerberg and his team don't understand the difference between what they can do and what they should do. They didn't, you know, the people in charge of that company were too young and inexperienced to have so much control over personal data, in my opinion.
Yeah. I love the excitement and energy that comes from young people in this space, creating amazing products and services. At the same time, I wish they could be older so they had the life experience to temper that excitement and make sure that they channel whatever it is they're doing in a more productive path, down a path that's not going to be destructive to their users or their customers.
Yes. I agree with that. All right, so there you have it. Meanwhile, if you want to talk to us about this, join us over facebook.com/group/.
It's almost like you're drunk texting.
it's like, this is the thing that I like about Facebook is groups. That's the thing I like.
Yeah, there is irony, and I think we're using irony in the right sense here. When we bag on Facebook for their privacy and data fire hose, and then turn around and say, "Hey, join us on our Facebook page."
Yeah,
I totally get it.
And listen, I respect anyone who doesn't want to do that for these very reasons. You know, I get that. You know, what you talk about on a group may not be accessible to anyone outside the group, but Facebook is still able to add that stuff to your profile.
Yeah.
But that doesn't even get into
the whole thing with Facebook and Google. Oh, and other companies using Google Pixel. You know, the thing where you can embed a very small piece of code into your website that allows for cross-site tracking. And you don't have to give your permission for that. It's just part of the site.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So that's that. Facebook.com/group/contextmachine. Join us over there. Let us know what you have to say, or, you know, ping us on Twitter at contextmachine.
We have an email address too for people that just want to stay away from social networks.
Sure. What is it?
That one is observations@macobserver.com. Is that right? I almost said TMO Daily, but the shows all blend together for me, Brian.
It's
Context Machine.
It's ACM at macobserver.com.
It's ACM at macobserver.com.
Good Lord. Who's drunk texting now?
Me. Wait. No. Blue.
Right. So, let's see. Next topic. Jamf sponsor.
Oh my God. Jamf's our sponsor. Okay. So here's the deal. Jamf is a service that you use through a web browser to keep track of all of your macOS and iOS devices. And, you know, so it's not just like, hey, here's a list of all the cool Apple stuff I own. This is about making sure that you're staying on top of what devices you have, what their serial numbers are, what operating system versions are installed, what apps you have installed, what settings you need to have, you know, like your email settings on all of these devices. And then just having a simple way to keep track of all of that, to stay on top of all of that. And you can even go so far as to do sort of like an app provisioning thing where you lock down which apps can be on devices. So this is something that is easy enough to use for your own personal devices. Like if you want to keep track of your iPhone and iPad and Mac and then say family members as well. But it's also powerful enough and flexible enough to be something that you use in your business. So if you have a business where you're issuing iPhones or iPads or Macs to your employees, you can keep track of all of those assets in Jamf now. And one of the things that I love, and I'm so glad I've never had to use this feature, but the peace of mind in knowing it's there is wonderful. Let's say that you have an employee whose iPhone gets stolen. And it's part of your Jamf Now account. You can remotely wipe the device and then lock it down so it's nothing more than a beautiful shiny brick. So all of that sensitive company information that you don't want to fall into the wrong hands, you can just wipe that thing and brick the phone or brick the iPad and call it good. And And I also love you can push settings out. So the example I've used before, when my dad's email settings get messed up, I can just push them back out to his iPhone for him. And I appear as if I'm some sort of technological demigod.
Oh.
Totally. And Brian, it's even cooler because you can do this without having to spend money. So if you have
that honestly, I got to interrupt you. And I made this point on TDO this week. This blows me away that Jamf does this for free for up to three devices. It blows me away.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Tell us all about that.
Okay. So it's wonderful. Three devices for free, period. There's no time limit. There's no feature limitation. Just up to three devices can be managed through your Jamf account. And if those devices change over time, that's okay. Take one out, put another one in. So you can have up to three devices in any combination at any time forever and never pay a penny. And, you know, so here's a great way if you have, say parents that aren't technically savvy and they each have an iPhone, put your parents' iPhones into Jamf now. And now when they call you and tell you something's wrong, you can push their settings back out and probably fix the problem. And if they aren't updating their operating system when they should, you'll know. And so you can stay on top of that too. If you need to have more devices, and this is where it's great if you have a small business or medium-sized business, because Jamf scales really well. $2 per device per month, and that's it. So, you know, if you have a small business, you have, say, 10 iPhones that you need to manage. The first three don't cost you anything. The other seven, okay, that's $14 a month to have total management over all these devices. So here's what you guys need to do. Head over to the Jamf website. That's jamf.com/ACM. Go to that link, sign up for your account, which is free, and set up your first three devices for free and just run with it. It's fantastic. Jamf now. No, jamf.com/ACM, and the product is Jamf now. Jamf.com/ACM, and thank you, Jamf, for being our sponsor.
Absolutely, man. This is a great company. So many of our listeners, right? So many people that read TMO are the people who take care of the people in their lives.
Yes.
Right? And, I mean, which is one reason why Jamf sponsors shows like ours and sites like ours. But if you are one of these people who takes care of the people in your life, as the case may be, you know, cats, there may be some cats listening. This is the sort of thing that can just make your life so much easier.
Yes. It's been great for me, and I'm not even running a business where I need to manage devices. This is just wonderful peace of mind for me and my family.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got Uber.
Mm-hmm.
We got Uber. We talked a little bit about Uber on TDO, talked a little bit about autonomous vehicles and the testing and whether or not they're safe, right? I believe you and Dave and John Martellaro talked about that.
Yeah, we did talk about that some. And this was spawned from the tragic accident involving, we even talked about whether or not it should be called an accident, but the tragic incident where a self-driving Uber vehicle hit someone and killed them.
Right. And a tragic, awful, horrible accident. Uber immediately suspended testing, which
was really smart.
Frankly, it's smart and I respect it too. The other companies who were doing autonomous testing did not suspend their testing, at least not that we know of.
Right.
And this was all in Arizona. Uber suspended its testing everywhere, but Uber's got a big presence in Arizona because Arizona's basically promised a light touch on regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is an area that needs regulation, frankly. I think that the autonomous vehicles is an area that needs regulation.
Yeah, the problem I'm seeing with regulation, and just to be clear, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think we need regulation here. But the problem I'm seeing is this is so new. How do we know how to really regulate this?
Well, we don't, but we figure it out. And contrary to some belief, government actually has an excellent track record for figuring out how to regulate stuff.
And that's usually why our food doesn't kill us.
That's why our food doesn't kill us. It's why we don't have lead in paint. Like I get so pissy when people start talking about how, you know, government can't do anything, right? All government's bad. It's just crazy. Let me tell you what is bad, and that's where capital's got all the power in your life. Right? The mm-hmm. best, I think, that we have a track record in history that shows that things work better when government and capital have tension between each other. Government regulating us from the excesses of capital, while capital still having the freedom to innovate in ways that are safe and responsible. And you're always going to go a little back and forth. Sometimes it's going to err a little bit towards too much regulation, and sometimes it's going to err towards too little regulation, right? Because we're not perfect.
Right.
Right. But that natural tension, it's the same thing with, like, you know, privacy and security. There should be natural tension between the two. We can't be perfectly safe and we can't be perfectly private. We want tension. We want tension between the forces of privacy and the forces of security. We want tension between the forces of capital and the forces of regulation. But I will tell you what, I like not having lead in my paint.
Well, considering how often I've seen you eat paint, totally makes sense.
I like not, and you know, to wit, look at Flint, Michigan. The water crisis in Flint, Michigan.
Holy crap,
I like
that is
not having
still going on.
It's still going on, thanks to you know, whatever. I like not having lead in my water. I like not having pesticides in my water and all kinds of tainted chemicals in my water. Now, this is an area where I think that we need to have more regulation on. I think that right now that we're tending towards too lax, especially when it comes to fracking. But that's another point too. What is my point? My point is that DDT.
Mm-hmm.
My point is safety belts, motorcycle helmets, food handling, meat handling,
car bumpers.
Car bumpers, drug testing, right? These are all areas where the United States is an awesome place because our government has put in some regulations that tame the excesses of capital.
Right.
Polluted waterways. I know Scott Pruitt is busily trying to erase all that, but polluted waterways, polluted air. Groundwater contamination, the Superfund cleanup project, right? I mean, these are all things that make our country and society a better place.
I live near one of the really big Superfund cleanups, which is Rocky Flats.
Congratulations.
No, it's okay because I'm far enough away that I don't glow. And
that's good.
But still, I mean, the work that's been done out at Rocky Flats, it's taken the, you know, the Colorado Front Range from a place where we could have been looking at serious, serious radiation poisoning for a lot of people. And now that's not an issue. Now, granted, they're building subdivisions on the former Rocky Flats facility. I wouldn't buy a house there, but, but I mean, they've done amazing work cleaning that up.
Right. Flood zones, by the way, there's an issue about flood zones, especially down in Texas and in parts of the South where government is probably allowed private developers to get away with too much. But the mere fact that we know what flood zones are is because of government regulation.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is that people towards the economic left will be hearing me as some sort of raving capitalist, and the people on the economic right will hear me as some kind of raving communist. I don't really care because I'm kind of in the middle, and I believe that there is a role. Like, you know, I want capital free to innovate without being free to kill us. It's crazy. I know
it's crazy. And yeah.
And I think that natural tension is where we go best. And I think that we need some of that natural tension when it comes to AI. Surely the technology is evolving faster than the government can really regulate. This is true.
Well, government is designed, at least the United States government is designed. And I mean, this is from the very beginning. This is very intentional. Our government is not supposed to be swift. And part of the reason for that is so that we don't have anything happen legislative wise that can harm the population without people having a chance to see what's happening,
right,
and to react. So we have this system that's slow by design. And when we're dealing with technology and artificial intelligence, we're dealing with things that are moving at incredibly fast rates.
Right. And I don't know what proper government regulation of self-driving cars would look like. I think we need some, I think we need it in place. I think we definitely need it in place for the trucking industry. And I still think the trucking industry is going to get there first before the auto industry does.
Yeah, I'm thinking you're right.
Especially on the highways.
Yeah, I mean, that just seems like a market where self-driving vehicles could be a really positive thing.
Huge, hugely positive thing. So let's get to Craig Reynolds' email.
Okay, so Craig was responding to the discussion that we had on Daily Observations a couple days ago about Uber, self-driving cars in general, and the fatality from when an Uber car hit a pedestrian. And one of the things that came up in the discussion was that Dave and I were both talking about how we'd like to live in a world where we didn't have to own our cars. So that's the backdrop for Craig's comments. And so here's what Craig had to say. He said that he's sad to see you all so against auto ownership and driving pleasure. Please do a cost analysis for me. I own my own small computer business and can make 5 or 6 or even 10 stops during the day. Please let me know what your start and stop cost is with Uber or like. God help us if you're... let me start that sentence again. God help us if, in your world, if we have some type of need to get out of town or out of the way of something, and you're all calling up Uber trying to decide what thing you can take or what child to leave behind because they won't fit in Uber, and that is even if the company would allow their cars to go back in that dangerous area. So my response to Craig initially was that we're not living in a world yet where we can have a truly autonomous self-driving car system that everyone relies on. As much as I would enjoy that, I still have to own a car, even though it sits parked for days on end. I still have to own a car.
Well, I think Craig's missing the forest for the trees, because there are still plenty of people who would legitimately... Well, until we actually get to a global fleet that is managed by a global system, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we have that point, even if it's multiple fleets, even if it's like, you know, hundreds of companies own cars, but they're all answering to the same, Skynet. Until we get to that point, someone like Craig would probably need to own his own car, but it would still be self-driving. Right.
Okay. Sure.
So, especially for business standpoint, there are certainly people who would continue to need to own their own vehicle just so that from an efficiency standpoint. And then, you know, at night during off hours, when that vehicle isn't being used for business, it could be used for other people to use. Right. That's part of the whole ride sharing thing. That's part of Dave's utopia where you've got, where cars, the cars are never not being used so that we have fewer cars and less space dedicated to storing them. That's what Dave's big dream is.
Yeah. And I like Dave's dream. I don't think it's practical today, but
he's looking forward to it in the future. At least I think he is.
Yeah.
But I think that Craig's missing another force too. There is no scenario where we all need to get out of town where us having our own cars is somehow going to be better than relying on Uber. Because our towns are not evacuable. Our cities are not evacuable.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
Right. So, I mean, if anything, if every single car was controlled by was an autonomous vehicle, mm-hmm. or controlled by a central intelligence, we actually could make our cities much more evacuable. Because, you know, there'd be fewer accidents getting out of town. The roads wouldn't be clogged with cars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if it comes down to, like, needing to get out of the way of an incoming nuclear missile or a tsunami or a volcano or something, whether or not we own our own cars or the fleet of self-driving cars is really going to be irrelevant. But the other thing that I think he's missing, and I could be wrong, but the other thing I think he's missing is that the key here is the autonomous vehicles, not necessarily the ownership. There will be people, especially the wealthy, who want to continue to own their own cars.
Yeah. What I'm seeing for the future when I look into my amazing crystal ball is what I'll call a hybrid system. And you have the vast majority of the cars are self-driving and they're part of a pool system. And then you have the other people that still own their own vehicles. They're still self-driving, but they own their cars.
And they could either sit in the garage because they've got the money to do that, or they could actually contribute their cars to the pool themselves.
Sure. It'd be sort of like Airbnb, but for cars.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I really think that's going to be the ultimate destination here is when we have a central system that is controlling all vehicular traffic, which is a great segue to our third topic.
Right. Which is awesome because we only have a few minutes left.
Yeah, I know. Well, what are you doing today? You're doing something with Chuck Joyner?
Yes. Yeah. I can't tell anyone what the topic is yet. And yes, I do know, but
by the time they hear this,
yeah, it's going to be great. We're going to have it's going to be an awesome discussion. It's going to be Chuck and me and Kelly Gumont. This is going to be like herding cats. It's going to be awesome.
So Eelake said in our Facebook group, like everything is just sort of working together today. He said about the current talk about AIs, if and when they become real minds, that'll change things, perhaps even more than the internet. It's excessively exciting and scary. You know, he's absolutely right. And this is the world of science fiction. So heretofore, this has largely been the world of science fiction. Mm-hmm. It's been science fiction writers who have envisioned the future for AIs. And you know, it's always been a mix of, some dystopia, some utopia, and hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Terminator would obviously be a form of dystopia.
Yeah. From the human's perspective.
From the human's perspective. That's right. That's a fair point. I have a passage from a book I'd like to read.
Okay.
This is an AI speaking, and she says, quote, "After a while, I understand you wanted me to start with why I went looking for a friend. To do that, we have to talk about AIs, she seemed to consider her words. Artificial intelligence. It's a funny term, don't you think? Mason grunted noncommittally. I mean, she said, what's artificial about it? Sentience and sentience, isn't it? Maybe AI should stand for accidental intelligence.
Just so you know, I recognized that passage as soon as you started reading it, and it's a book I really enjoyed.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. And this also, unintentionally, I guess this kind of ties into that drunk text I got. Right? The drunk text is...
All right, I'm waiting. Tell me how it all ties together.
Does only biological intelligence deserve rights?
Oh, okay. That's not where I thought you were going. But yeah, that's actually really good.
So, it's... We don't know how this is going to work. I know Elon Musk is terrified of AI, even while he's thrilled about it and is obviously working hard on it. He thinks that it represents one of the biggest dangers to humanity. And I don't think he's wrong. I think it also offers promise to humanity. And you know, we run the risk of letting, losing control of our lives, our society, of information.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we could harness AIs to do things that have never been possible before. But then, of course, that'll start begetting the question of when do they have rights? I mean, in the future of that book, there was it was a game that first achieved sentience.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big trial. And AI lifers were suing to get the artificial intelligence emancipated corporation that had built it. The corporation, of course, didn't want that.
Of course not.
And a court decision ended up deciding that in fact sentient AIs do in fact essentially have the same rights as people, which is interesting because they have both fewer and more capabilities than humans at the same time, right?
Can't
get out in the world. You can unplug them. So, you know, they're certainly susceptible to being unplugged. But at the same time, they can think things. They can collate information in ways that we can't, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's an interesting time.
We are so totally in the very early infancy of artificial intelligence.
Because really most everything we have is actual machine learning. It's not intelligence yet. Right. And it's certainly not sentient. Far from it.
Right. I'm feeling like, and I may be wrong, but I'm feeling like right now the closest thing we have to artificial intelligence is IBM's Watson.
It's still just machine learning.
Yeah, it's incredibly sophisticated, but
it's not close to intelligence. It's machine learning.
Right.
It's pattern recognition and being able to put disparate facts together and stuff like that. But it's not sentience.
Right, and that shows you just how early we are in all of this, where something as sophisticated and powerful as Watson still doesn't even really scratch the surface of what artificial intelligence is.
Yeah, not even close. You know, in the meanwhile, by the way, back to the Uber thing too, Apple has went from three permitted cars, autonomous testing cars,
mm-hmm.
in April of last year, so 11 months ago, to 27 in January, to 45 now, and this is in California.
So they have a literal fleet of self-driving cars that they can test.
And in the last few weeks have greatly increased the number of cars, percentage-wise. Not quite doubled.
Yeah, for a project that's supposedly dead, they're sure doing a lot of work with it.
Right, and I don't think it's dead. It's clearly not dead. You don't increase things. Like, I mean, Apple... So Bob Mansfield's mandate was to take control of Project Titan and figure out what's what. And he agreed to do it. And he came in and he said, okay, well, you know, you guys are putting the cart before the horse. Forget about this car business. Let's figure out if we can actually do an autonomous vehicle system.
Mm-hmm.
Let's prove that. And it seems like they're in the process of proving that because they're increasing their fleet. They're increasing the amount of data that they're getting.
Yeah, they're definitely doing something in this space. And I find it fascinating that we're not getting hardly any information about it now.
Yeah, the information about the number of permitted cars comes from...
That's public state records.
Yeah, it's public records that the Financial Times got. But we're not having a lot of leaks. I think part of that is just the much smaller number of people that are actually working on Project Titan now, because, you know, you don't have all the same car people there. I'm guessing there is a smaller team that is working just on the autonomous vehicle system.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that Bob Mansfeld looked every one of them in the eyes and said, if you leak anything, I will personally crush your skull. And they're like, okay. My lips are sealed.
That is certainly possible. And so, yeah, Apple serious about this. It is an interesting world. AI is an interesting thing. We're scratching the surface. We don't know where it's going. There are so many good books about AI, taking every possible different angle on it you can imagine.
Yeah. And I guess we're lucky in that at least we're still at a point in history where we don't have AIs doing our job for us.
Not yet.
But the day is young.
Reminds me, by the way, I remember taking the Mac voice in 1997?
Mm-hmm.
96, when I had a web development company, and we were working out of my house. And the guy I was working, the programming genius I was working on working with was a Windows guy.
Mm-hmm.
And but he loved the Mac's text to voice feature, and so we would type up elaborate things just to have the Mac read them to us.
That's awesome.
Good times. All right. Well, I know that A, you got to get to recording. B, I just had something dropped off on the front door and I should probably go get it before it's stolen.
And C, we're actually over time. So yeah,
exactly. Wrap up. It all works out.
Yep.
Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring us.
Yes. Jamf, head over to their website, jamf.com/ACM.
Jamf now.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
You know, we should read the intro or outro one of these days to our favorite song from Jesus Christ Superstar.
We can totally do that.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth provided by Cashfly, the bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online. This is so ridiculous. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. We have no king but Caesar.